Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. This week's show is titled Draftacular Part 1. We're going to do a quick recap on what Big Baller Bean has accomplished at this stage of free agency, this late stage of free agency, pre-draft. And then we're going to kind of hit our needs, and Dan and JJ are going to talk about our big board. Now that I've said, you know, referenced myself in the third person, Dan, how are you feeling?
Dan is feeling great, JJ. Dan is ready to talk about the draft.
That's good.
Dude, I am
good,
so
good, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you, JJ. I love talking about the draft. This is kind of what I've been itching for, and I have to applaud your patience and restraint. So for those of you listening who don't know this, I have a very firm rule. I do not do any mock drafts until free agency starts. And this is simply not how one Mr. JJ opposite me operates. I begin getting mock drafts from you, sir. I think the day after the Super Bowl is over.
And no, it was the day after the Bills playoff run ended.
The literal moment
they were out of the dance. I was like, okay, let's see what we're going to do next year.
You are single-handedly sustaining the cottage industry of mock draft that is now like ballooned in this modern era of NFL fan talk that we live in. But I applaud you because I say to you every year, dude, we cannot talk mock draft until free agency happens, because too many needs, too many things could shift as a result of what Bean does. And every year you are patient, you are accommodating, and now it is your time to shine, sir. We are now ready for mock draft. So this is going to be a two-parter. All right, we've been advertising it on social media. This week you're going to get part one, which is going to be our big board. Then next week you're going to get our full 7-round Buffalo Bills mock draft here on the Buffalo Bread Podcast. JJ, it is draft season, sir. Let's get into it.
Finally. Oh, my God. Not to overstate the point that Dan made, but I actually joined the like beta testing team for the Draft Network last year when they were unveiling their new, you know, draft machine, or their, you know, mock draft machine. And so I was in the Discord with, you know, all the people checking out features. I had the like private link to go to the hidden page to check out the mock draft machine and test it out and provide my feedback. So that's the level of kind of insanity that we're talking about here.
This is breaking news. I had no clue you were in the beta testing group. Oh, my God. Your commitment to this mock draft industry, sir, it sets you above and beyond any other podcast host out there, sir.
I appreciate that. Yeah, no. So if you use the mock draft machine and you like some of the features and the complicated trade, you know, metrics and back-end system, I had a little bit of feedback in different parts of that process last year. So
you may send your thank you bourbon to JJ.
That's JJ. Yeah, let's not DSS or so. So let's get going with the there's no way to set the expectations of the draft without, like you said, you know, free agency really sets the table. And there's been some moves since we last spoke for the Buffalo Bills. We have signed Casey Tuhill, defensive end, Mike Edwards, safety, Will Clapp, lineman, interior kind of offensive lineman, mostly a center backup, and then Austin Johnson. And so those are the four kind of major moves. Did I miss any of them since we last?
No, I think you got them all.
Yeah, so to give a quick thumbnail on each of those signings for our listeners, Casey Tuhill, defensive end, previously played with the Washington Commanders behind Sweat and Chase Young, hasn't really done too much in the league, was originally a draft pick by the Eagles and then kind of signed by Washington after the fact, had 5 sacks this past year, which is kind of a career high. Is absolutely insane when it comes to the RAS score. So he's a plus athlete and an elite athlete at the position. However, that has not really presented itself in kind of play speed on the field. The only thing I could say about his, you know, he's like an amazing motor and pursuit player. So he reminds me a lot of like a Harrison Phillips, you know, or Kyle Williams type, except a better athlete, but he does not give up on plays. That's evidenced by a couple of his sacks he's had in his career, actually on Deshaun Watson when he was with Cleveland, coming just because he would not give up on a kind of play as Deshaun Watson left the pocket. And Deshaun Watson was not expecting any of the defensive linemen to have the juice to catch him from behind. And Casey Tuhill has done that. So I think he's exactly the kind of player the Bills want as a kind of higher floor, lower ceiling DE3-4 in order to come in for 20-30% of the snaps on a rotational basis. Does a solid job of setting the edge, does a solid job of keeping his rush lane and not giving many escape routes for the quarterback. And then, as I mentioned, good pursuit player. So that's one. Any comments, any notes on Casey Tuhill before we move on to Mike Edwards?
No, he feels like a guy that if the Bills swing and miss in the draft on an edge, he can fill in what the AJ Epenesa role has been, which is about, like you said, 30% of the snaps. He's got a great motor. He is relentless. You know, he is the profile athletically of what the Bills have been going for at the position. And every year they bring one or two of these guys in and they hope they can unlock something in that athletic ability that is beneficial to the roster. So we'll see with Tuhill. But yeah, I agree. Rotational guy probably at best and likely competing for snaps with a rookie.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, as you mentioned, unlocking something is the key here. If Bills Mafia likes Casey Tuhill, it's because the Bills find a way to do something no other team has done in his NFL career to this point, which is tapping into that extreme athleticism and his elite athletic profile and giving him the tools to use all of his juice, because that's what, you know, you just don't see it on film with his, you know, speed and burst. It should be so much faster given how much of an athlete he is. And so hopefully, you know, with the tutelage of if Von Miller can't do, maybe he can teach, right? And so there's some good opportunity here to get some veteran kind of guidance with the Bills. And interestingly, the order that we're talking about these people is the order they were signed. It's also a descending order of athletic profile. So Casey Tuhill, top of the RAS score for his position. Mike Edwards, probably of all of the players I'm going to talk about, the best starting caliber in terms of, you know, what he can offer day one for this football team on the roster. Mike Edwards, a safety who played with Tampa Bay for his rookie contract, won a Super Bowl when Tom Brady was there, and then played for the Chiefs this past year for 1 year, and that actually was an injury fill-in for the entire last five games stretch, and then the playoffs, has a lot of interception production for limited starting roles, and is just kind of a solid guy, average athlete, but has good anticipation of where the football is going to be, has good, you know, eyes for reading the quarterback, gets dirty in the run game and run support comes up, has a pretty high missed tackle rate, but that's, you know, largely because he's always inserting himself in the position to tackle, and sometimes, you know, is a little bit off angle. But it's interesting because watching Mike Edwards, and we've seen a lot of him because he played with the Chiefs all year, watching Mike Edwards play, I see the missed tackles show up not because he's a poor tackler, but because unlike other safeties, he's always where the tackle is happening. And there's a lot of safeties who just will stay out of the mess and wait for things to happen as the last line of defense. Mike Edwards is not that. He's very aggressive at triggering, clicking, and closing downhill. And so I really like this signing. I think that, you know, between him and Taylor Rapp, they both have sort of duplicative skill sets in some regards. But so I think there's still an opportunity in the draft to look for mid-round, maybe third round, if they ever trade up into that round, safety to come in and kind of compete for one of the two starting roles, especially as a deep center fielder like that Micah Hyde position. What do you think about Mike Edwards?
Yeah, I think the Mike Edwards position is as close as you're going to see to a free agency replacement for Jordan Poyer. You know, and it's interesting, at the safety position, JJ, I tend not to worry too much. This is an area, unlike offensive line, where the Buffalo Bills have my unconditional confidence that they're going to develop these guys into whatever they need them to be. The book on Taylor Rapp when we signed him was that he was pretty much a box safety, going to be good in run support and hit some guys. But then he ended up playing in injury substitution for Micah Hyde. He ended up playing that center field, free safety, floating coverage kind of role. And while he wasn't as good as Hyde, not many people are at that, he showed some chops there. I think the Bills think they can mold whatever skill set they bring in via draft or free agency at that position into whatever it is that they need. So this is one of the few times I will say, whatever these guys have been that we're talking about at safety in their previous iterations with other team or in college, kind of throw out the window because the Bills have this amazing ability to take any player with any skill set at safety and develop it for the most part, Jaquan Johnson being the exception, develop it for the most part into exactly what they need to fill the role that they're asking that player to play. So it'll be interesting to see, but I agree with you. I think this pushes safety down the draft board a little bit as far as need goes, probably to a day two or even a day three selection.
Yeah, absolutely. And as mentioned, kind of declining RAS score, Tuhill is like a 9.5 out of 10. Mike Edwards is kind of the 6 to 7 out of 10 range. And then Will Clapp, the offensive interior reserve lineman who's played most of his NFL snaps at center, has had some NFL snaps at left and right guard, and has had snaps at kind of the reserve tight end, heavy set tight end, like David Edwards did all of last year. Checking into the eligible extra lineman on the line. Those are the kind of positions he's played. He's like a 3 out of 10, kind of very poor athletically, and it shows on his film. He's got a super stout anchor, but not the player you expect to like be pulling wide around the edge of the line and, you know, getting blocks in space on the move. But does a solid job of setting the depth of the pocket, has very short arms, is not kind of going to, you know, wow you with most of his reps, but has been stable in his career, has been a decent starter when he's been called upon. I like this too, because this is insurance. I think I agree with you that the Bills really hurt their depth on offense. And you've been making that point, you know, a few times, is, you know, cutting Morse, trading Bates, doing this whole thing of sliding Connor McGovern over and inserting David Edwards. They went from a solid 5 with 2 excellent backups to, I think, a solid 5, period, right? Like, end of story. If they incur any sort of injury, they're sort of in trouble at this point. And so I think that still leaves, you know, offensive line as a need. Any notes on Will Clapp, other than his excellent name to pair with Sean McDermott?
Has an incredible name.
Yes.
And it pairs perfectly, like a fine wine and cheese, with Sean McDermott. But this is a move they kind of had to make. Clapp, to me, is underwhelming. I would love for a rookie to supplant him for any meaningful rotational snaps. But again, it's a signal that the Bills took a strength in the offensive line. They had a top 5 offensive line, I think, inarguably last year. And it is so hard, JJ, as we have talked about, to find these guys, particularly to play the interior effectively, to find these guys in any substantial number. Look at how many teams. The Dolphins are still having issues putting together an offensive line. I don't know what the Patriots are doing with their offensive line, but if they bring a rookie into that situation, that is malpractice for quarterback development, because that O-line is still a disaster. You look at what the O-line for the Jets was last year. They're at least trying to do some things. It's hard to find these guys. And the Bills had not only found a solid starting 5, but they also had really, really good depth. And the moves they made with Morse and Bates didn't... The Morse move, I get from a salary cap perspective, but there was still a salary cap savings to be had by keeping him as well. Not as much as the 8.5 they ultimately got, but still could have saved against the cap had they restructured. And Bates brought them almost nothing against the cap. The move, to me, is going to be the one that, when we talk preseason about doing our segment, why the Bills will win the Super Bowl, why they won't win the Super Bowl, offensive line and the shenanigans that this Buffalo Bills front office has played there is going to be the reason. I am holding that opinion a bit to see what they do in the draft. But at the end of the day, like, they took what was the top 5 unit and they decided to do this self-imposed rebuild in that unit, and I just don't understand it.
Sure. No, I get it, and I think that, you know, it's, in a lot of ways, I think that it looks like, at least from the moves they've made, and we can't be in the room, so we only can read what they're doing. To me, it's a commitment to younger, cheaper, at the expense of strength. And that's, you know, that's really it. That's all I'm seeing here, is, like, they really said, okay, we are not going to be able to afford Spencer Brown resigning. We are not going to be able, they're already probably not going to be able to afford Osiris Torrance if he stays on the trajectory he's on, considering Robert Hunt just signed 5 years, 20 million or 100 million, you know, 20 million per year. Like, that's, you know, that's what they're looking at right now. And so Osiris Torrance being a set the market player, I think it's a commitment to say, like, okay, we need to get much, much cheaper on the line and we need to rejuvenate with youth. And I hope that that trends, because I will feel much better about it if they take a stab at a fourth round interior offensive lineman and then another stab at one in the seventh, right? Like somebody who they can just check out. And I trust Aaron Cromer with guys like Alec Anderson as depth on the line to try to rebuild the interior. But really, we don't know. And that's the big problem is we went from years of projecting with elderly, you know, offensive linemen and hoping that they would, you know, have a career resurgence with the Bills, to now it's an opposite side of the spectrum of projecting with, you know, completely unknown quantities and hoping that they develop into something meaningful. All right, we've got one more to hit before we'll set our expectations and positions of need and go on our big boards. Austin Johnson, he was a college teammate at Penn State with DaQuan Jones, and he is the lowest of the lows in terms of these four signings in terms of our RAS relative athletic score. Is like a 2, like a 1.89. Did not test well, is not fast, is not quick or twitchy, does not have like the burst from jumping. But I'll tell you what, he looks like he does. He looks like the greatest athlete you've ever seen. He's yoked. And he, everything that you would expect him to have problems with on film because of limited athleticism, he's one of those outliers. He's like the opposite of Casey Tuhill. Casey Tuhill should be a 10 sack a year consistent starter based on his athleticism and how, you know, explosive he is. He hasn't put it together. Austin Johnson should be 7th string practice squad based on his relative athletic score, but he's a solid rotational interior defensive lineman and exceptionally good at setting the anchor in the run game. Exactly what you'd expect for somebody who's close friends with DaQuan Jones. They play similar games. DaQuan, of course, is a plus athlete, and Austin Johnson is not, but a perfect kind of understudy in that role in the one tech. What do you think about Austin Johnson?
No, I agree, and I think you've described him perfectly. And I think he, like Jones, is going to find a different level to his game in the scheme that the Bills run. Very different from what he's coming from. It's going to let him focus in the areas of strength that you have seen him flash on game film. He'll really be able to specialize in this Bills scheme. So this is actually my favorite signing of the bunch here in late round free agency that they've made, JJ. I still think interior defensive line is going to be on the board for them in the draft, but this feels like a really solid stabilizing move for a defensive line that really has been in flux.
Absolutely. And with that said, I mean, I think that what we've seen is now, you know, the Bills opened free agency, creating their own holes in the interior of the offensive line depth. They had a plan for starting, but they had nothing behind it. They had incredible amounts of holes on the defensive line, which they shored up with some of the recent re-signings, DaQuan Jones, AJ Epenesa, and some external signings, Casey Tuhill, Austin Johnson. And then the safety position was a complete unknown, you know, with Poyer leaving, Hyde still out there and undecided in terms of whether or not he's going to play football next year. And so they re-sign Rapp, they sign Mike Edwards, and they re-sign Cam Lewis. So we've got, you know, to me, it looks like we may not see other moves until after the draft. After the draft, there's always a shuffle. There's always bottom of the roster stuff that happens. There's always higher priced kind of veteran players, maybe on the down incline of their career or the decline of their career, who end up on the street as free agents. And also after the draft, all of those, you know, signings will no longer count against the compensatory pick formula. And that's when Brandon Bean likes to do some extra work. He likes to hunt for some extra depth and some extra insurance policies at starting positions that they may not have hit on in the draft or may not be able to count on from a draft pick. And so I think that there's some likelihood there. And not to mention, you know, keep in mind, Bills Mafia, that as sad as it was to see Tre'Davious White go, $10.7 million comes on the books June 1st for the Bills to use in free agency, to use, you know, kind of restructure, extended signing, some different things. They could maybe, you know, rework something with Rasul Douglas for another year. They could look to get Spencer Brown done early. There's a lot that could happen with that money.
Absolutely, buddy. And I think given that that is likely to be the case, unless there is a surprise Jadeveon Clowney signing by the Bills and not the Jets, which is
also
not,
possible,
which is yeah. not how it's looking like. I will say that I think you are correct. I think the Bills are done right now in this stage of free agency for the most part, and they are now focusing on the April draft, which is where we shall, sir, now turn our attention. So before we get into our big boards, right? So how we're going to do this is we're going to line up for you the positions of need that we think the Bills have to address in the draft in April. From there, we're going to give you four, maybe five players at each position that can be had in either day one, which is round one, day two, which is rounds two or three, or day three, which is rounds four through seven for the Buffalo Bills in the draft. We're going to give you some guys that we've talked about extensively, like A.D. Mitchell and that kind of stuff at certain positions. But we're also going to share with you some late round gems that we think could really bolster this Buffalo Bills roster. So, JJ, why don't we kick it off and start with our areas of need, all right? Where do you want to start with the areas of need you think the Bills need to address sitting in a post-free agency world?
Yeah, I think that, you know, like we do so often with the podcast, let's break it into halves of the kind of halves of the main kind of game, offense, defense, right? And let's start with wide receiver, because that's still my number one. That's the position I want first pick in the draft to be a wide receiver.
I love that you've come on board with this, man.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. No, absolutely. Because of what I've seen. Curtis Samuel is a reasonable replacement for the Y or Z on the field, right? He's young enough. You don't have to worry so much about Stephon Diggs taking a step down or back or moving into the slot, because Curtis Samuel can play that Stephon Diggs role. We don't have an X. We don't have what Gabe Davis was supposed to be, which is the big body, 6'4", you know, 200-plus pound, solid with blocking, beats press coverage off the line, deep speed threat. We don't have that guy on the Bills roster. And now that free agency has kind of settled, and it's not like they're trading for T. Higgins, right? So it's a position where they absolutely need to plan for the future. And to go into this, and if there is still, like, top 5, 6, or 7 of the, you know, wide receiver class on the board at 28 and they go defensive end, I'm going to be pretty disappointed.
I am too. I think that's where it's likely headed, though. And the Samuel signing is interesting. We dug into it a little bit, right? He gives you something you already have, not something that you need. But I also think too, short yardage situations where we saw Diggs come off the field last year, JJ, in favor of having Davis, Shakir, and Sherfield, all of whom are elite run blockers, I think you see Samuel out there more just to maintain the threat of someone potentially running a route and catching a pass. Because, listen, no shade at Gabe Davis, but when he was out there in those situations, everyone pretty much knew he was run blocking. Sherfield, no one was scared of. Shakir was really your only guy, but still underdeveloped in his usage in the scheme at that point. I think Samuel is there for when Diggs comes off the field in those we could run or could pass short yardage situations where he is still a threat to do what Diggs does, but brings a little bit more utility in the run blocking game. I mean, I think that's it's really all it is. And it's a reasonable financial commitment to bringing in someone that can give you that kind of versatility. But I agree, wide receiver is still number one on my board, and we'll get into who we think the Bills should look at, but it's got to be a very specific profile of wide receiver, which is why I'm out on guys like Ladd McConkey, who I know will make some people sad. I'm also out on guys like Xavier Worthy. Like, I love the speed, but he's a body catcher, right? And he's really, really tiny. So we'll get into that a little bit more. JJ, sticking with the offensive side of the ball, I have offensive line as a blanket need. I go in this order. I go interior and I go tackle. But for the Buffalo Bills, they're always looking for guys that have line versatility, can play multiple positions. There are a few guys in this draft that they can target that do have 3 or even 4 position versatility that I think could address a multitude of needs for them. So I've got O-line as a blanket. I'd like to see them address interior first, particularly the center position, center for the future. But then with Spencer Brown's contract coming up, I do think a developmental tackle is going to be in play for them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would agree with that 100%. And that sort of concludes my list on offense.
You don't want a tight end? You don't want to get another tight end?
No. I don't want another tight end unless it's like, you know, just sort of like a camp body sixth, seventh rounder, just to see if they find something and maybe has special teams ability. I will say sneaky need for me that may be addressed and may surprise some folks is running back, because the Bills, of course, you know, James Cook is their number one bell cow back at this point. Ty Johnson showed a lot, and he re-signed with the team, and I think that happened after the last time we spoke. So that was a good re-signing. In my, you know, my definition, I think we saw that Joe Brady got a lot out of Ty Johnson, and so he's got some good upside. He's young. He's athletic. So there's advantage there. But I still think they're missing that kind of, you know, large, heavy back who can take some of the goal line touches away from Josh Allen, get him out of that mess that happens in the line in short yardage. And so, you know, I think that there's possibilities, and this is a bad running back draft, but there are some big body running backs who we've both talked about, Audric Estime, Braylon Allen, who we really, really like, that could be had potentially in the middle rounds. So we'll see. That's the last. So I'm with you. Wide receiver, offensive line, general, and then running backer. That's it for me. I kind of just want Joe Milton. If you're going to pick a quarterback in this draft, give me Joe Milton out of Tennessee. And that's all I'll say about that. He's just an athletic freak, and I've already talked about him.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. So those are needs in a lesser capacity. Those really are depth additions. And really, when you're talking running back, I think you're talking personal protector for Josh on clear third passing downs, because I don't think you have that with Cook or Johnson. So, yeah,
that's true.
All right. So, yeah. All right, dude, let's switch over to the defensive side of the ball. Again, I've got defensive line as a blanket statement here. And again, I'm going interior and edge. So I'm going interior defensive lineman. And like wide receiver, there is a specific profile I think we're looking for. And that is the one tech, the DaQuan Jones replacement of the future. Someone who can come in, be an understudy to Jones, and really provide a big gap eating, double team eating body that can really free up and unlock Ed Oliver. And then I've got edge, because I think, again, the Epineza re-signing was great, but he's only on a two-year deal. They are likely parting ways with Von Miller at the end of this season, just for salary cap reasons alone, and they can finally get out of that contract this year. And then Greg Rousseau, they got to make a decision, dude, on his fifth-year option. And he, I don't want to use the term injury-prone, but for, we've talked about, for a guy with his odd body type, right? He has seen a lot of injuries, dinks, dents, that kind of stuff over the course of his Bills career. They got to make a decision about him long term too. So I think edge is definitely on the board here. And while I hate to say this, I think depending on how the board falls, edge very well could be a day one selection for Brandon Bean.
No, and we've talked about this. I think it could be too, because it's with the talent of this wide receiver class, seven could go before the 21st pick, right? Seven wide receivers could go. There just couldn't be the talent even in striking range for these Bills, especially without a third round pick. And so there could be a situation where they kind of have to take the second best or third best edge, because the board just demands that, you know, any other pick would be a kind of a waste of position in the draft based on what's available. But we'll see. I agree. I think I would flip it for myself. I think edge is the number one of those two positions between edge and interior. And then, you know, I do like some interior depth. Austin Johnson re-signing, DaQuan Jones for 2 years. Those things are like favorable to me. I feel like even just those three with Ed Oliver is a solid kind of starting point for the season. And then, you know, they could get some depth in there from practice squad capable players and late round picks to just try somebody out. So I'm not in as much of a panic about interior, but I do think that the outside edge rusher needs to be addressed in the top four rounds at least. So yeah, I'm with you there. And then, you know, safety, what are you thinking at safety?
I'm thinking safety. I would almost put, we're not really ranking these with any kind of scientific system, I would almost put corner over safety at this point. You know, Rasul Douglas is going to be your one. Christian Benford probably going to play on the outside opposite of him. Kair Elam being allowed to compete. You really need to fill that Dane Jackson role of fourth cornerback coming off the board, and we've seen Christian Benford again. I don't want to use the injury-prone tag, but he has been oft-injured early on in his Bills career, so you need to roll into the season with way more depth, and given where the league has gone, you can never have enough guys that cover. So, again, I trust McD and that unit with safeties to mold whoever they need to into doing what they need to do. But I think corner is a position I would put slightly over DB. And again, depending on how the board falls, there are some fast physical corners in this draft. Depending on how this board falls, I would not be shocked if corner is not a day one consideration for the Bills too.
Really? I would be surprised
I would not be shocked at all. Based on what I'm reading, and like, again, you and I don't have insider info necessarily, but there seems to be, if you like listen to the Bruce exclusive or you read any of the beat writers that are coming out of Buffalo, there seems to be an active consideration that they really need to bolster their secondary in the face of the defensive line issues they've seen year over year.
Yeah, no, and I think that's possible. I think that what we see with the Bills is that there's a likelihood that they will, you know, attack the big money five positions. And the big five money positions are, like, of course, quarterback, offensive tackle, and then on defense, it's corner, it's edge rusher, and then wide receiver back on offense. So those big money five positions are probably going to be the focus, and, you know, it's could be a cornerback. I think for me with the Bills, it's most likely that the approach to corner is going to be like a later in the round pickup for them than a first round. And I know it's like I'm kind of contradicting myself. I said it's a big money position. They'll attack that early because cheap contract of a rookie for 4 years or 5 years, especially if you get that first round fifth year option, is valuable. But I also look at this Bills team and their history with drafting corners. The only one they ever picked above kind of the fourth round was Kyir Elam, and that has not turned out very well for them because the expectations were very high and the production very low. And in a draft where the Buffalo Bills pick 28 in the first round, 60 in the second round, and then not again until 128 in the fourth, and then they have two fours, three fives, three sixes, and a seventh. So I just see corner, unless the fit is absolutely perfect, Cooper DeJane, you know, in the first or somebody like that. Kool-Aid McKintry was the coolest name in the draft, maybe. Unless there's somebody like that coming out and hits right at their 28 pick that's unexpectedly on the board, I don't see them picking corner early. But I do agree, it's a big money five position, and it could happen there. For me, though, it's like classic Bills. Fifth round.
I know, right?
They're going to go ham on CBs.
Let me give you a scenario. Kyir Elam traded draft day for a third round pick, right? I think if that happens, I think cornerback gets elevated, right?
Yeah.
So, and he is, when you look at the Bills' desire to get back in the third round, because I make no mistake, they thought their comp pick for Tremaine Edmonds was going to land them in the third round, which is why they traded the third rounder for Rasul Douglas. They don't have a lot of assets left on the board unless they want to package some of the 10 or 11 picks they have in this year's draft to try to get back up into that range. But a guy like Kyir Elam, with the athletic profile that he has, is the most tempting trade asset they still have on the board. And regardless of the coaching change that we've seen, it could very well be that the Bills are ready to kind of cut ties and start over and acknowledge that that pick was a mistake by trading him to get back into the third round as an asset. I think there is some four-dimensional chess around the cornerback position going on right now at One Bills Drive, which is why I wouldn't necessarily take it off the board being a day one pick, depending on how things land on the board.
Yeah, no, I think that's a completely valid opinion, and that changes the whole landscape for me. If they trade away Kyir Elam and they don't believe in him anymore to compete for one of those roles at depth or starting, then I think absolutely it pushes that need way up the board. So that's for me. I think that mid safety went from a high need to a mid-round fill-in for me. And again, I'm with you. I trust the Bills defense to the scheme and McDermott and Bobby Babich to develop and staff working for Babich to develop whomever they pick in the DB room to be a capable starter. It's a weird outlier that Kyrie Elam with his athletic profile has not come more because they've been able to turn a lot of players who have lesser athletic profiles into meaningful starters. Dane Jackson, Levi Wallace, like they do that with players on a regular basis. And that's also why I was mentioning earlier, the Bills have, you know, most of the picks in their draft are fourth round and later. They only have two picks in the top and then nine in the bottom. And so I expect some of that, you know, draft capital to be used on defensive backs, both in safety and CB.
Absolutely. And that is where Bean is absolutely lethal on day three. He really knows his stuff. I'm almost not saying he doesn't have a third round pick, because that is usually the most controversial pick of the entire draft that Bean tends to make, right? Yeah. We're always debating the third rounders, whether it's running backs or linebackers. We are always debating his third round pick use. But all right, man, let's get into our big boards now. All right. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball. Right. And let's start with what you and I both agree is the number one need for this team, even if Bean does not agree with us, and that is wide receiver. So let's break it down for some day one, day two, and day three options. And let's start with you, sir. Where do you sit with day one, pick 28, if the board falls favorably for the Bills?
I mean, I feel like a broken record. The true pure X receiver with that like wide receiver one talent, for me, it's Brian Thomas, A.D. Mitchell, Troy Franklin, maybe. Like that's sort of it for me. That's if none of those three are in striking distance, I'm sort of out on a round one wide receiver. And I would say the way I'd rank them is Brian Thomas, A.D. Mitchell, and then Troy Franklin, the way I said them. So, you know, I think that it's tough because both A.D. Mitchell and Brian Thomas, to some extent, are sort of their big years were their most recent years, which you want to see growth, of course. Troy Franklin, I think, has been more consistent in terms of starting in college, and all three of them are kind of 6'3", 6'4". Brian Thomas is the only one with like the body composition that I look for in the first round, because Troy Franklin and A.D. Mitchell are both the height, but they're not the weight. You want to get above 200 pounds so that the player will hold up in press coverage, kind of have that strength to kind of help with the run blocking. And get off and have a good release even against bigger corners in the NFL. Those are my first round talents. How about you?
I have the exact same three, and I debated about putting Xavier Worthy in there because I do think he could sneak himself into the latter rounds. I watch a lot of his game film. I think he is a very polished route runner, especially being asked to do what he was asked to do in Texas. I've put up some comps between him and Stephon Diggs because I do think he is fast Stephon Diggs. I am, though, like I am every year, hyper-focused, JJ, on wide receivers that can catch and secure the ball. And Josh Allen, our Lord and Savior, who we love, doesn't always throw the most catchable ball. And Worthy tends to be too much of a body catcher. And we've seen with some of these smaller targets, the Isaiah McKenzie's, even though Worthy isn't nearly as tiny as McKenzie is. But we've seen with some of these smaller, lighter wide receivers, they have a really hard time bringing in a Josh Allen throw. So Worthy has had some drop issues in his career. It was way worse in 2022 than it was in 2023. But his catching mechanics to me and his competition at the point of catch take him off the board for me for the Bills. If the Dolphins want to add another really super fast guy that's super tiny, by all means, have fun with Xavier Worthy, right? Mm. But for me, it is A.D. Mitchell, Brian Thomas, and Troy Franklin. I debated too is Xavier Legette here, but I think Legette is much, much more a day two, round two type of guy.
If they got him in two, I'd be so happy.
Absolutely. It was interesting. I was listening to the Mina Kimes mini mock draft special. And I think she was doing it with Danny Kelly from The Ringer. I can't quite remember. But they were actively talking about A.D. Mitchell is a culture fit for the Bills. He's a scheme fit and he's a need fit. But they were openly debating whether or not someone like A.D. Mitchell would mesh with a guy like Sean McDermott and his coaching style. And, you know, it's interesting. There has not been a lot of AD Mitchell buzz coming out of Bills camp. There's been a lot more Troy Franklin, a lot more Xavier Legette, right? They're kicking the tires on AD Mitchell, but I feel like for them, it is Brian Thomas Jr. or bust. And out of all the names that we've mentioned, he had the best college production, given it was only for 1 year, but he's a guy who actually matches traits with production on the field. And I think the Bills are really going to be attracted to that. So if Thomas isn't there, I think the Bills potentially roll the dice and either trade down or go defense with pick one.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's possible. And really, I mean, we'll talk about, you know, can I shift to kind of day two and beyond? Because I mentioned, Xavier Legette in the second round, I think would be a good pick. He's been compared a lot to Deebo Samuel, which is a little bit unfair for, you know, a rookie. But it's mostly just because he's got that like really thick build and he has that explosive kind of after catch ability as a runner in space. And so I think that that's why he has that. He also had an amazing testing at the combine. And so I think he's rising up the board a little bit. Another second round target for me is Jalen Polk, who's a little bit shorter than the other receivers we've talked about out of Washington, 6'2". But he's sort of, you know, a limited route runner, but he's good contested catch. And that's, you know, saying something because there's a lot of good receivers in this class. And then kind of as we move down, you know, it gets light. Brendan Rice has been a player, of course, Jerry Rice's son. I think he's got a really high floor and will be a solid player. I just know it's the kind of thing where when you watch him, you're like, what is his exceptional talent? He's just generally solid. So he might be a slight upgrade from Gabe Davis early on, but I don't know that he's ever going to like really supplant a wide receiver one. And that's surprising given his lineage.
JJ, and this is the conundrum I think the Bills are in. If they don't go wide receiver round one, they almost have to go wide receiver round two, pending their ability to get a third round pick. Because once you start getting into third round and even day three, you're really talking about guys that are not your wide receiver one of the future. They're not your Stephon Diggs replacement. You could potentially develop someone in the fifth or sixth round to do that, right? I mean, we've talked, and there's some guys that are going to be available that fit the profile that probably have a longer developmental arc. But if you're the Bills, you have this clear, glaring need on your roster. And if you don't address it early in the draft, you really are kicking the can down the road to 2025 and even 2026 when it is time to part ways with Diggs potentially. You're kicking the can down the road and you're letting the need come up on you as opposed to trying to manage the need proactively now when the talent is in the draft class. And listen, there's always going to be guys available. But like we saw with last year's draft, every year the class shapes a little bit differently. Last year, it was a lot of slot guys. It was a lot of Z guys that were in the draft, right? This year, you finally have some really good, not generational, but really good X-style talent. And for me, the Bills got a strike early. So if it's not round one, it's round two. And if they kick the can down the road to day three, JJ, while there are some guys that are there, and we'll talk about a couple of those in a minute, it is very likely that we're seeing the Bills address wide receiver again in 2025 and 2026.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I'm a little bit, you know, I have that concern too of don't be the team left in 2013, that amazing wide receiver draft when who's the Tampa Bay Buccaneer? Mike Evans came out. A lot of players came out.
Yeah. That was a great draft. I'll pull it
Bills
up.
Yeah, Bills missed out because was that the year that they traded up for Sammy Watkins? I want to say it was. Yeah, Dan's going to pull that up for us. Thank you, sir. But some of these like legendary wide receivers classes come through. You don't want to be the team that picks the fourth round guy when all these other teams have their solid locked in wide receiver one for the next 10 years. And you're kind of left holding the bag, or you got a defensive end or defensive tackle who turned out to be a solid starter, but not an all pro, not a pro bowler, nothing, you know, to say too much to his game, and the class was absolutely outstanding at one position.
Yeah, 2013 was the Robert Woods year. That's when the Bills drafted Robert Woods. But ahead of him,
they got him in the second. Yeah.
DeAndre Hopkins, Cordell Patterson, right? Tavon Austin was in that draft and ended up being kind of a bust. I think Sammy Watkins was 2007, wasn't it?
Seven. Okay. Yeah, that was
The Odell Beckham year.
Yes, that's right. I got those mixed up, but that's what I'm saying is like, you don't want to, I don't want them to Sammy Watkins it. I don't want them to trade their entire future up for Rome Odunze, who I think is going to be exceptional. But everybody starting out, you know, the Sammy Watkins year thought that Sammy Watkins would be the like best receiver to come out of college football in a decade. And he ended up being a complete, complete bust. And so, I mean, he had a good year with bad quarterback play in the Bills, and then he sort of went crazy and fell off. So, yeah, I agree. I think that this, you know, if it's Brian Thomas or bust in the first, I'm good with that. And I would even be willing to trade, you know, future picks if he got in striking range of the lower high teens to get up. Because, like I think that the Bills are going to be very gun-shy. I think Brandon Bean's going to be afraid of 22 and the Trent McDuffie, Kyer Elam situation, where they waited a little bit too long and they got sniped by Brett Veach. And Trent McDuffie is basically an all-pro, and Kyer Elam can't get on the field. And so they have a clear need at wide receiver of the future, and other teams know it. Other teams have watched them, you know, the Bills in free agency, and they recognize that there's still that, you know, that gap. And so I can see, you know, them being a little gun-shy about week. And so I hope if it's Brian Thomas Jr., of course, like I hope they get up and get him. How about some late round guys? I know, you know, and this is a situation where late in the draft, you know, take a flyer on some of these guys, even if you picked first at 28, you know, or 17 or 18 or something like that, with a wide receiver, go again, dip into that pool, because it's a lot of these players that are going to be picked in the fifth, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, are players that in another draft class without that top level talent might have gone in the second or third round or the fourth. Who do you got?
So I've got a couple guys here. I've got Luke McCaffrey, brother of Christian McCaffrey. I think he ran with like 4.5 speed, which is fine. He plays a little bit faster on game film. Pretty developed route runner. Really good at the point of catch. Like in this round, JJ, I'm looking for the basics. Can you catch the ball? Can you run a route? And are you reasonably athletic and fast? And I think Luke McCaffrey absolutely meets that need. Javon Baker, JJ, another one from the University of Central Florida I have on my big board. I think he brings a real, real competitive attitude at the point of catch. He, again, I think ran a flat 4.5 in the 40. But again, game speed is very different from running in a straight line in shorts. So I think he's another one I would spend a day three pick on. But JJ, this is my day three. This is my day three guy. Bub Means, University of Pittsburgh. I've talked about him three or four times. I've featured him a couple of times on the social media feeds. Bub Means, dude, is an absolute athletic freak. He is 6'2", 215, runs in the 4.4s. Very polished route runner, but like, wins with separation vertically down the field as well. Did it a lot in college. His ability to adjust and track the ball in midair is already pro level. And you need that if you're going to be catching 50 and 60 yard bombs from Josh Allen. Bub Means, University of Pittsburgh. Get this guy, Brandon Bean. This is the guy that you need to grab in this draft.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I want, just for your sake, just because I want to be part of the celebration. If the Bills pick Bub Means, I want to kind of watch and see you go through that, because I think it'll be a special moment. And my kind of late round guy is what I consider the Wish version of A.D. Mitchell. He's also a receiver that plays in Texas. He's also like 6'3", 6'4", and, you know, 185 pounds. So he's thin and tall. It's Joshua Cephas out of University of Texas, UT San Antonio Roadrunners. Smaller school, but he was a three-year or maybe a four-year starter and is a senior. I know that the Bills sometimes they are willing to sacrifice a younger age for somebody who has production consecutive years. And, you know, so he's like a 900 snap per season guy. And so has the experience, could be a player, has decent hands, not a lot of drop rate issues, has shown, you know, very good against man coverage. And so, you know, good receiving, you know, across the board. So just one of those, like, take a flyer on him, see if you got anything. Let's move into offensive line. You want to hit that quick and kind of each give our slate or menu of options?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I don't see the Bills going offensive line in round one unless there is a supremely talented prospect that falls to them. And to me, there's really only two that would qualify as that for me. Don't get me wrong, there's a lot of really great tackles in this draft, but I don't see any of the elite tackles on day one falling to the Bills at 28. But there could be some interior line guys that do fall to them. Graham Barton from Duke is a day one guy for me. He has 5 position versatility across the line too. Mostly played tackle in college, has played some snaps at guard and center. He projects JJ at the next level to be a guard. All that being said, and he could probably really push David Edwards this year in that role to play next to Deion Dawkins. All that being said, though, his positional versatility is going to have him ranked high on a lot of teams' big boards. And if he were to fall to the Bills at 28, it would be, I think, tempting for the Bills to go in that direction. And then the other day one guy I got is Jackson Powers Johnson, interior offensive lineman, mostly center, from the University of Oregon. He seems to be, with Barton, competing for that top interior versatility position type of guy in this year's draft. I think Powers Johnson is likely gone earlier in the draft to a team like Pittsburgh. I mean, honestly, a team like Miami could use that kid too, but I have no idea what they're doing this offseason other than doubling down on the same dumb stuff that they do every year, which is fine by me. Please, by all means, keep doing that. But as a Dolphins fan, our friend Steve, I think I would be very frustrated with our offseason. Yeah. Those would really be the only two day one guys for me at that point on the offensive line, save for if one of the elite tackles fell to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm with you. I have no notes. Both Jackson Powers Johnson and Graham Barton are great. The only one I'd add into that mix is possibly Zach Frazier out of West Virginia. He's scheme versatile center. He can play guard or any of the interior positions based on his athletic profile. He's been a center mostly in college or only in college, but I believe he has the capability that, you know, sort of like how when the Bills picked up Eric Wood, he started at guard even though he was a center all through college. That's what I feel about Zach Frazier. Probably is going to go at the end of the first round or early second round. That's the only player I think day one would be in consideration. For me, I'll lead off with day two options. Patrick Paul at University of Houston, 6'7", 315, sort of like leans into what they picked when they, you know, with the tackles they like to choose. And so I think that is being a possibility. And then some of the other players that I keep seeing come up whenever I'm doing kind of my mock drafts, which, as you know, I do all the time. Matt Goncalves out of Pitt. They love Pitt guys. And he's sort of, he had a season-ending torn ACL this past year, so his medicals at the combine would be very important. But he could play, he's got some tackle or guard flexibility, 6'6", 330. And so that's one. And then Dominic Pooney, Kansas, 6'5", 320. And he's also possible kind of guard with starting potential who played tackle in college. A lot of times in college, if you have the athleticism to play outside, in the next level in the NFL, you might not have the same athleticism, especially if you're a third or fourth round.
Yeah, I love those guys. I'll add a couple more to the day two list here. I actually have Zach Frazier on my day two list. I think he will fall to day two. I agree with you. I think there is some limited versatility for him to play guard or at least learn guard. But I think a lot of teams are projecting him as center only. And as a result of that, I think Zach Frazier might fall to day two. Mm-hmm. Cooper Beebe out of Kansas State is another guy I got. This is like the twin brother of Osiris Torrance as far as body makeup goes.
Large, dude. Large and wide.
Dude. And if you were to put Torrance on the right side, BB on the left side, you have the makings of a young brick wall interior that'll protect Josh Allen for the next 3 or 4 years. All right.
Okay.
And then finally, JJ, I've got Christian Jones out of Texas. Big, athletic, well-balanced guy, primarily plays right tackle. This could potentially be your Spencer Brown replacement. Like, I will not be sad if they do not re-sign Spencer Brown. I think he's been fine. I think ultimately, given the project that he was, I think he's been okay. I would not, though, based on the salary cap situation of the Bills, I would not shed a tear if they decided not to commit long-term money to him and reset the clock on that right tackle position. And to me, Christian Jones is a guy they could do that with.
Sure. My kind of later four, Javon Foster out of Missouri, 6'5", 319, kind of a plus starter. Again, a lot of experience coming out of Missouri. And Mizzou has produced a lot of good offensive linemen. And so that's a player. And then later in the rounds, Tanner Bertolini, we've already talked about a little bit, out of Wisconsin at center. Late round guys, Brandon Coleman out of Texas Christian, 6'6", 320. Just basically that's a projection to say, like, okay, he played a lot of snaps the last 2 years, but has not been kind of a top of the class, of course, but somebody you could bet on traits and him growing into his body a little bit and getting some strength. That's the biggest thing, is strength and athleticism for Brandon Coleman has been a little bit lacking, but the Bills have been shown to he's a good technician, and they've been shown to bet on that a little bit.
Yep. I've only got one name to add to that, JJ, and that is Roger Rosengarten out of Washington. Tackle prospect, projecting right now, early fourth round, day three type of selection. 6'5", 308, has amazing athletic scores and could be the guy again that serves as like this backup high ceiling swing tackle for the Bills, or longer term, positioning him as the Spencer Brown replacement. But this is a dude with his athletic profile that the Bills absolutely love. And if they've got a ton of picks coming in the fourth round and on day three, and generally, as we've talked about, this is a guy who I could see Bean packaging some of those late round picks to move up early in the fourth and snag right away. And I think that would be quite the coup by Bean if he couldn't manage that, because this is a guy who played in college at the D1 level to the level of expectation that they hoped Brown would play. This is a guy that comes in with some legit college production, not just the athletic upside. And I think it'd be great if they could finally marry the athletic profile with real college production at that right tackle position.
Absolutely. I'll hit very quickly last offensive position for me. I don't think quarterback's going to be a consideration unless it's a late round flyer on just a camp body. But running back, I mentioned before, we talked about having a personal protector for Josh Allen. Audric Estime, Notre Dame, Braylon Allen out of Wisconsin. Both of them are above 220. Both of them around 6 feet. So big time, large body presence in the running back room that they don't really have right now. Both of them would probably not be available past the first fourth round pick that the Bills would have. So it would be kind of a trade up into the late third or trade up into the early fourth for them. And then the last person I have is like late round flyer guy out of Oregon State, Deshaun Fenwick, one of those big body guys, 6'2", 220, could develop into something. But again, if you're using a sixth or seventh on him, I don't think it's too much of an investment. How about you, Henny?
No, I mean, Allen is the guy that I want out of Wisconsin. Right. I think he pushes the bill at like 244, doesn't he? He's a big, hulking dude.
Yeah, he's massive.
I joked on a previous pod, but now I've kind of come around to it. I mean, that could be a Reggie Gilliam replacement at some point, right? I mean, like, that dude could be a very versatile, athletic fullback.
H-back,
oh my God. Mike Allstott, let's bring it back, baby. Let's bring it back. Mike Allstott, let's do this. But yeah, JJ. Let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball, and let's start with defensive line. And we'll go with your number one need on the defensive line first. Let's start with our edge prospects for the Bills. So where do you want to take us on day one? Sadly, in reality, should that be the case for the Bills at number 28?
Yeah, I think that there's you know, three names. The top three in the class are Dallas Turner out of Alabama, Jared Verse out of Florida State, and Laiatu Latu out of UCLA. Watching Laiatu Latu on film, it's sort of, he's amazing. Like, in terms of just having the natural presence, balance, being able to kind of ghost dip the edge, all that stuff is there. The athletic profile is there. I think his, you know, he at one point was medically retired from football. And so, and that's a concern. I think that might drive him down the board a little bit, because he's a top 20 pick by most draft, you know, Knicks. But he, the medical will scare some teams. So he might actually drop down the board to the Bills. Those are the players that I think, if they were there at 28, you absolutely pick. But then it gets into kind of second round talents for me with plus upside. Darius Robinson from Missouri is probably the player I would take if I were the Bills over somebody like Chris Braswell or Chop Robinson late in the first round, just because Darius Robinson is more the Bills 4'3 body type player. He's 6'5, 296, close to, you know, 300. So they like players that can, they can have position flexibility with. Chop Robinson and Chris Braswell are a little bit light. They're long and light, and not necessarily the type. They're closer to the Casey Tuhill, the free agent the Bills just signed, in terms of their body composition. So Darius Robinson definitely fits the size. Those are my, you know, possible first round targets. How about you?
Chop Robinson? What do we feel about Chop Robinson on this pod?
I do not want to mess with any Penn State defensive ends ever again.
He's the only one I have on my day one big board, but he is grossly undersized, and this feels
skills or polish. He has no moves.
He is all athletic upside at this point, right? Not a lot of college production, undersized. He to me would be. And again, we're happy with the AJ Epineza re-signing, but he would be, to me, going with a guy like Epineza, asking him to dramatically change his body type, and you're not seeing any meaningful production from him for like two or three seasons. But I've seen Chop and mocks to the Bills, and he has the athleticism that they covet. And again, like any coaching staff in the NFL, they think they can take a lump of clay and turn it into, like, you know, David, you know what I mean? So Chop, to me, he puts on 20 pounds. The Bills feel like they can coach him up. I'm saying he's on my big board because I think he's on the Bills' big board. I don't necessarily think, though, I would take him in round one, given the size concerns.
Sure.
And lack of college production.
Yeah. So many things.
He's like no college to me. Right. I mean, they got to stop doing this. All athletic upside. They got to stop doing this stuff at edge. Day two, I gotta be honest with you. If Chop falls to day two, I like that pick more.
Yeah, yes.
I don't have a lot of guys on my list at day two, because I feel like at that point, the Bills are really looking at interior defensive line on day two, or wide receiver if they screwed up the 28 pick, or if they trade back. So I've got one dude, again, remarkably undersized. And I honest to God, don't think that the Bills should go this route.
Is it Jonah Ellis?
No, it's Gabriel Murphy out of UCLA. Okay. Yep. And he's going to be there because of the athletic profile. He's 6'2", but light, 247.
Yeah.
An amazing 40 time. Had some limited college production, but again, it's the undersized nature of the player that I have my most concerns about. If the Bills, JJ, do not go edge in round one, I want them to skip over round two and then go immediately to day three, where I actually think there are some diamonds in the rough that they could draft.
My day two is Marshawn Neyland out of Western Michigan. He against lesser competition, he absolutely dominated, which is what you want to see with a player who doesn't play in kind of the SEC or something like that. He's incredibly physical. He's explosive. He's got the size the Bills covet, 6'3", 275. Was a year-over-year starter at Western Michigan, of course, but was able to improve his game each year. And so you want to see that upward trajectory of a long-term starter in college. And so Marshawn Neyland is a player that, if he's around in their second, you know, their second pick at 60, I would definitely like. And I do, if Chop Robinson fell, I wouldn't hate a second-round pick for him, because he does have that kind of package and explosiveness. But, you know, it still seems like such a gamble for me. Braylon Trice out of Washington in the second round at edge would also be somebody that I'd be cool with the Bills taking if they took a wide receiver in the first to come and get a, you know, another one of those big time money positions in the second. And he is about 6'4", 274. So he's that kind of size that the Bills pick in the top end of the rounds.
Neyland is fascinating to me because, again, he's got size. He's got the athletic profile. I think he peaked at Western Michigan with 4.5 sacks. He is a dude to me that either will not be there at 60 or will be there in the third round. But it's precarious for the Bills either way, because if he doesn't fall, they might need to trade up for him. And if he does fall to the third round, they're going to need to trade up for him because they don't have a third round pick, right? So Neyland to me feels like a guy, because of his traits and size, is going to go earlier than pick 60. And I like Trice too. I don't know that he's there at 60 either, which is why I left him off my day two board. Dude, edge is such a complex position for the Bills this year. And which is why, again, I really think they're leaning to round one, because after that, it becomes unmuddied for them. And I feel like they think they can get a wide receiver at 60. I really do. I think that is the mentality. Because again, the drop off in edge is severely less than it is at wide receiver, but there is enough separation between a day one edge and a day three edge to where I see the Bills addressing that, so they don't find themselves in that position of having to trade up in the second round and potentially sacrifice assets they would need to get into the third round to add another quality pick to the roster as well. So edge is the most fascinating, frustrating position for me, JJ. But there are some dudes on day three that I think the Bills could absolutely, with a lot of that late round ammo, end up going for. One guy I've got on my day three list that I absolutely love is Miles Cole out of Texas Tech. 6'6", 278, 4'6", 740. His 10-yard split, JJ, was 165. That's better than some wide receivers, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely off the chart score when it comes to RAS in both size and speed. He is a guy on day three that I absolutely think the Bills would covet and run to the podium should he be available with one of their fourth round picks.
Sure. Really that high, Miles Cole?
Yeah, that high.
Fourth round. Okay.
Yep.
For me, I like that. I like that pick. I've not really watched him on film, but, you know, just reading his profile, I'm like, wow, that's somebody I have to look at more. A fourth round pick that I think about is if Justin Ebo Igbe from Alabama falls a little bit. He is, again, like I don't love this because I think we talk all the time about how much we hate that the Bills pick excellent run defenders who have not a lot of pass rush ability for edges. But he is that. I think he'd probably be a plus starter in that role. And the Bills rotate so much that a first two down role for him would be good. Jalen Green, JMU out of your alma mater, could beast. Be had probably he's in the fourth or fifth is the kind of player you watch and you're like, wow, that person is not 6'1", 240 pounds, but he absolutely is. He's undersized, but he plays so much bigger. And so that's a player that I think has that kind of pass rush specialist and would probably be an outside linebacker in a 4-3 or in a 3-4, but could offer the Bills something. And they've shown, you know, with the signing of Von Miller, that they're willing to take a chance with some non-traditional body types and archetypes in their line if it means having that pass rush juice. So that's it. I have, you know, I think that anyone else would be sort of a projection for me. I haven't really watched many of the late round edges because I think it's one of those money positions that you tend not to get somebody who's a real contributor past the third round.
Yeah, yeah. I love you bringing some JMU love into this conversation. Jalen Green, the reason I stayed away from him on day three, yeah, it's the size profile, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he projects more to be your Saran Neal replacement on special teams,
right,
than he does anything meaningful probably into the actual 11-man rotation on defense. So, all right, man, let's talk interior defensive line, and then we'll get to cornerback and we'll get to safety to land this plane. So And again, we're basing this on who we think will be available for the Bills on day one, two, and three. I do not have anyone on my big board day one, JJ, at interior defensive line, particularly that one tech position. if a guy like Byron Murphy were to fall, I know we're probably going to depart on him should that actually be the pick. The Bills probably run to the podium and they probably take him, right? Johnny Newton out of Illinois may be another one, although he really projects more as the Ed Oliver type. But I don't think either of those two guys are going to be there. So for me, my board starts on day two with Tavondre Sweat out of the University of Texas. Big, hulking, 366, ran a 5-second 40 at the combine. Dude is an absolute, absolute gap eater, double team eater. He's a run stopper. He's just not an every down defensive lineman at this stage of his career. If you're looking for a developmental comp for him, I would point to Jordan Davis of the Philadelphia Eagles out of the University of Georgia. It has taken him two seasons to really kind of find his fit on that defensive line. And I think a guy like Sweat, while worthy of a day two pick, it is going to be the same thing. You bring him in clear run stopping downs to spell DaQuan Jones, and you let him study up under Jones, and you hope he eventually develops some pass rush ability over the next 2 or 3 years of that position. But I have no one on my day one list.
I just have one person on my day one list because I also don't think that Johnny Newton or Byron Murphy are going to fall. I don't like Byron Murphy as a player because what I watched on film was somebody who doesn't have a lot of contact balance and gets out of the rush lane consistently. Like, he makes huge plays, right? He's got this amazing burst and ability to kind of tackle and meet in the hole. But he gets out of position and he falls down too much for me. So I worry about that quite a lot at the NFL level when everyone's bigger, stronger, and faster than anyone he's been going against at Texas. But in the first round, Braden Fisk out of Florida State, I could see him creeping up the board because he absolutely lit the combine on fire. So he'd be a Ed Oliver backup and kind of, you know, a little bit of run defense deficiency, but plus pass rusher and has the profile to become an elite pass rusher based on how fast and he's not small. He's 6'5", 297. So a little bit undersized to mix it up in the middle, but certainly nothing that, you know, he's bigger than Ed Oliver and has a lot more juice than Ed Oliver did coming out of college. So Braden Fisk is my only round one interior that I think is reasonable in striking distance. I'm with you 100% on Tavondre Sweat. Watching Byron Murphy, I actually was gravitating more towards Tavondre Sweat because he, for a big man, moves way better than you can believe he would, and he has incredible contact balance. He tends to stay on his feet in the muck and in the mess, and is just such a large human that they don't tend to move him off his spot. And he has that preternatural ability of somebody like a Ted Washington to one arm extend and hold a blocker off of him and then use his other arm to scoop up a tackle. So it's just, I really like him in the second. The only other player I think that, you know, could be worthwhile to take a swing on in the second round, maybe a little rich, but, you know, it's possible he could be a riser. Mason Smith.
I had him too.
Might be down in the third or fourth, but might creep up board 6'6", 315, could be a 1 or 3 tech. He's physically gifted, but again, it's kind of bet on traits with him because he'll need to develop for a year or two before he's a reliable starter.
Yep, I totally agree. I had Smith on my day two list along with Sweat as well. Day three for me, I've got a couple of names on here that I like. And again, you're getting more into the territory of interior line versatility. Could play one, could play three technique position, which I think the Bills would be hopeful for and looking for on day three. And if they don't package, JJ, if they don't package assets to move up in the draft at any particular point, I could see wide receiver and defensive tackle being double dip positions for the Bills. So on day three, I've got Jaden Crumity out of Mississippi State, 6'4", 301, sub 5-second 40-yard dash, 1.69-second 10-yard split. Was ranked third overall, I think, in the shuttle exercise at the combine with a 4.66 seconds on the shuttle. So he's got the size. He's got the athletic traits that the Bills are looking for. I think he could be a really nice day three selection for them. Another guy for me projects more at the one tech or three tech rather than the one tech, Logan Lee out of Iowa, 6'5", 281, a little bit heavier than Ed Oliver, but could be a solid rotational piece for them.
Sure. I've just got, two two later round picks. Keith Randolph Jr. out of Illinois, a solid starter, you know, over 3 years through college every year. Had some injury stuff come up, but could be a possible. And again, this is like fifth, sixth, you know, seventh rounder. Evan Anderson out of Florida Atlantic, smaller school, lesser competition, but is that sort of, you know, plug in the middle, 6'3", 350. So sort of your discount to Vondre Sweat that you can get late in the game, who's not nearly the athlete to Vondre Sweat is, but could be a player, you know, especially if you just need someone to fill that plugging one tech to kind of keep you anchored on rundowns. Evan Anderson's a good player for that.
Totally agree. All right, sir. Let's move on to corner, and we'll wrap this thing up here, I think, with safety. So now I think corner is a consideration for Bill's brain trust at One Bill's Drive in round one. I don't think, and I don't have any round one considerations at pick 28 for cornerback on the board. I think Cooper DeJean is very likely gone in the 20s, even in the teens, given his positional versatility and athletic profile. I think the only guy, JJ, and he's a guy who could potentially fall depending on what the value of the skill set of this really kind of diverse array of DBs in this draft is. I think if a guy like Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama falls to Buffalo at pick 28, I really do think it's going to be tempting for them to go with him. Because they really don't have a clear successor for Tre'Davious White now that they moved on from him. I don't think, even with the coaching change, with the Dye coming in and as the new secondary coach, I don't think the Bills overall as an organization are sold on Kaiir Elam. And I think Christian Benford, again, while he has flashed, I don't know that that's your CB outside CB1 of the future, given his industry history and injury history. And what his overall athletic profile and ceiling could be. I could see the Bills wanting to avoid the mistake that they made when they picked Elam and got forced into it by thinking about this need longer term down the road. So if Kool-Aid is there, if it's like Tavondre Sweat, Kool-Aid McKinstry, and A.D. Mitchell, all available at pick 28, JJ, I could absolutely see the Bills going with Kool-Aid McKinstry in round one.
Sure. Yeah, no, I like that pick. He was my kind of first round CB. And, you know, I also think that TJ Tampa has been mocked to the Bills in the first round, 6'2", 200. So they like length on the outside. He's from Iowa State, can play any kind of outside corner role. Don't know if he's worth that pick, that level, but Kool-Aid McKinstry, I feel, absolutely is. What do you think? And I feel like we can just smash it together and talk about our safeties in the first round. Is there any safety for you in the first round? For me, I don't think so. Tyler Newbin is getting mocked to the Bills at the end of the first round.
And
I think he's the only safety in the entire draft who's worth a first or second round pick, but I don't think he's fringe first, right? He broke all of, the safety for Tampa Bay who just re-signed this year.
Oh God. Winfield.
Son of a Bills. Yeah. Winfield. Antoine Winfield Jr. Yeah. He broke all of Winfield's records at Minnesota in terms of, you know, interception production, tackle production, all those different things. And so I think that, you know, that's amazing, but I just don't know that that's not a top five money position. And so I don't see them spending a first on it. If he's around in the second, I'd feel a little better about it at 60. But yeah, that's the only CBs I have are Kool-Aid McKinstry and TJ Tampa. As for safety, it's Tyler Newbin in the second. In the second for CB, Ennis Rakestraw out of Missouri is somebody that I like.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And Kyrie Jackson out of Oregon is another one I like. 6'3", 195, so definitely the size profile. Athletic combination it's like an uncommon size and athlete combination. But he's developmental. He's not going to come in day one and be a starter or compete for a starting position. Do you have any day two kind of safety or CBs?
I do. So at the CB position, I've got Cam Hart from Notre Dame. JJ, I love this dude. 6'3", 202, ran a 4.5 40. His hip fluidity, his footwork mirroring, absolutely elite at this stage of his development. And he is a guy, as offenses are getting lighter and faster, he is a guy who will fit well with the zone scheme and the nickel packages that the Bills tend to like to play. But also, dude, he could absolutely press man one of these light Jaylen Waddle types into oblivion if he really needed to with his physical profile. I really like Cam Hart on day two. Unfortunately, I think he's going to be mid-second round, and I just don't think the Bills, unless they trade back, are going to have a lot of assets to play with in the second round. But I absolutely love Cam Hart, his speed, his athletic profile. I think he is a guy to me that screams Buffalo Bill on day two.
Okay, yeah. No, I like it. And he is projected right around the same area that Elijah Jones out of Boston College. They've got almost the same kind of body type and production in college. And so, you know, Cam Hart, Elijah Jones are two kind of interchangeable players for me. I like them both. And day two, safety-wise, I think, of course, Cameron Kitchens is there for me, and your guy, Cole Bishop, out of Utah.
So Cole Bishop is actually my number one safety in this draft.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. His combine workout absolutely put him at the top of my list. I know that from a college production standpoint, guys like Newbin, guys like the Washington State kid, Jaden Hicks, right? Mm-hmm. That there's a little bit more on film. Dude, his athleticism absolutely jumps off the page at me. And I do think he's going to be a sneaky second round pick for some team. I don't know that the Bills are prioritizing safety in round two. I think they've got their design set on Cam Kitchens, despite the horrible 40 time that he ran at the combine.
All of his athletic testing was awful.
Brutal, just absolutely brutal, right? But I think because of the connection to Adai and the University of Miami, I think they're hoping he slides deep enough into the third round to where they can leverage a day three pick to move up and snag him. So I would love to see Cole Bishop, dude, in a Buffalo Bills uniform, but I do not believe that they are going to spend pick 60 should he fall to them, or spend capital to move up and get him. But he is a prospect that screams Buffalo Bill to me in that secondary. It would thrive in a multitude of positions, be it the nickel, be it in the box, be it in the free range center fielder. His athletic profile, he would thrive in this Sean McDermott scheme for sure.
Nice. There are a few day three kind of targets I think that I like. Malik Mustafa out of Wake Forest is one at safety.
Love 5'11", this kid.
207. Yeah, you love him too. He's your kind of throwback, you know, old school, you know, box safety. Gets in, gets nasty. At CB, I like Dwight McGluthern. This is a player out of Arkansas, 6'2", about 180, almost 190, who I have almost every mock draft I have, he sticks out on the board in like the early fourth or late fourth round. And I grab him because he's kind of the prototypical size that the Bills like in corner. He's a good tackler. He's good in coverage. He can stick with people in man. He's a plus athlete. He, you know, has a lot of forced incompletions. He has had touchdowns, you know, he's run some back for touchdowns. So he's just a solid all around player and, isn't getting as much play out of Arkansas. I think the level of competition hurts him a little bit. But 3-year starter, I think he also missed some time with injury this year. And so that might worry some teams. But, you know, Dwight McGluthern, that's my guy.
I love it. Day three at cornerback, I've got Miles Harden out of South Dakota. 5'11", 195. Again, a 4.5 40 at the combine. Athletically, fits what the Bills want to do. He is, he's coming from playing, I don't want to say a lesser brand of football because you know me, I'm a big FCS guy. JMU recently made the jump from FCS to bowl championship, moving to the Sun Belt. So I've watched a lot of FCS football in my time. And dude, these dudes can absolutely play. He is not the fastest, but he does have amazing short area quickness and can close in on guys. And I think Harden for me, JJ, might be the most pro-ready tackler on my day three list just because the way he wraps guys up. and like clings to them with every fiber of his 5'11", 195 frame.
Yeah.
To me, he is a guy that can wrap a guy up. He can close a tackle, but you know, the Bills like to swarm the ball. He could be the tip of the spear in that swarming type of scheme that they like to play, moving to the ball. And he's a guy who can absolutely stop Yak in a zone scheme. So I really like Miles Harden. And then on the safety side, you hit on who might be my favorite, not the best, but my favorite prospect here, Malik Mustafa. This guy tackles everything. He is a hammer. Everything is a nail to this dude. He is an incredible throwback box safety. He would absolutely thrive in the run-stopping game for the role that the Bills asked these DBs to do. And dude, we've talked about Zach Moss saying he wanted to have people make business decisions when they tackled him. If you see Malik Mustafa coming for you in the open field, you as a ball carrier need to make a business decision about whether or not you want to take that hit or run it out of bounds. I love Mustafa to the Bills, JJ, as a developmental box safety on day three.
Yeah, that developmental box safety for me is Keaton Oladapo out of Oregon State. 6'1", about 200 pounds. And he is the kind of player who really, like, he also makes runners make business decisions about running out of bounds instead of meeting him. Because his run defense grade, according to PFF, was top among all safeties. And so, you know, I know that the Bills put a lot of stress on that. And yeah, he's got the size, 6'1", 200 plus pounds, and he's a senior. So he's been a 3-year starter, in college, and each year has improved his game slightly. So Keaton Oladapo is one of those players I could see the Bills taking a flyer on late and trying to develop him. And then of course there's always a possibility with this front office that they're going to dip into the pit, well, and there's two CBs, AJ Woods and then MJ Devonshire, both kind of smaller 5'11 players under 200 pounds, but could be developmental slot or outside CBs, depending on matchups. And both of them have the capability, I think, to kind of understudy behind Teron Johnson. So that concludes it for me with defensive backs for the draft and targets that I specifically have been watching or looking out for.
Yep, I've got a lot of the same guys on my list, save for the dudes who I already talked about, JJ. So before we wrap it up here, do you have any other prospects that you want the Buffalo Bread community to focus on at any other positions?
You know, I don't want to overstate the importance of this position, but I think that, you know, this may be the most critical point of the draft. Austin McNamara, a punter out of Texas Tech, with so many 5th, 6th, and 7th round picks, you know, 9 of them between the 4th and the end of the draft. I think that if the Bills feel that their needs have been met, at that point, using a 7th on a player that's probably a UDFA in most people's boards, Austin McNamara, 6'4", 210, Texas Tech punter. They'd signed Matt Hawk. They guaranteed, Sam Martin for his salary this year. So it's unlikely, but it's a low amount of money. It's unlikely that they're going to do this, but I would like to see, like, I just love to have consistency on the punting, you know, side of, and that part of the special teams year over year from the Corey battles and Corey Bohorquez, and then Sam Martin comes in, and then the punt god gets finangled in kind of legal drama, and now he's on the Chiefs. Like, there's a lot of, you know, instability at that position year over year. I'm just so tired of it. I want to see them pick up a rookie who turns into a plus starter and just stick with him for years. And I think that's Austin McNamara, Dan.
I don't dislike it. I think it is bold. I think it is bold, sir. And it is a position of long-term need where the Bills could really use a young, cost-controlled control. Just like a punter coming out of the 7th round is so cheap to have on the books, especially compared to what you're going to potentially pay Hawk and Martin. You know, holding for Tyler Bass is always a big question with the punter, but if this is a kid that could learn that, I'm all about it. I have another approach that the Bills should take this season to punting. They should eliminate punting from their repertoire and just go for it on 4th down. If it's 4th and 17, you go for it. You say, Josh, you're going to bomb it downfield. You're either going to arm punt an interception, or we're going to convert this 4th down. But I think the Bills should absolutely go for it on fourth every single time they have the ball and forget the punting game.
Josh Allen gets the instruction of throwing to the deepest man on the field, no matter the jersey.
Exactly. Like,
just
exactly.
Throw directly to whoever the deepest man you see on the field is. And if it's us, awesome. We convert. If it's them, that's an arm punt.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know how many guys Josh would pin on the goal line if he's throwing from his 40? I mean, it'd be absolutely insane. Absolutely insane.
Yeah, just throw it super high so they can get under it. And then, you know, your wide receivers just need to tackle.
Just run verts with your pass catchers and be like, you're either going to catch it or you're going to tackle. Good luck, guys.
That's right. I like it. I like it.
Love
That's
it,
a good, good note to end on.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Arm punt's always a solid note. So that is it, folks. That is part one of our draft tacular, the Buffalo Bread Big Board for this year's 2024 NFL Draft. So part two is coming next week, and that is going to be our full 7-round Buffalo Bills mock draft, with commentary on where the board may land and each of the picks that JJ and I are hoping that the Bills are going to make when the draft rolls around here in the next few weeks. So for those of you listening at home, thank you very much. And as always, like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Google only until April, as it turns out. Apple and Spotify. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.